After some uncertainty over the timing of Wisconsin's spring general election, voters headed out to the polls today as originally planned. They're casting ballots for state Supreme Court justice, a statewide referendum about crime victims' rights, the Democratic presidential primary, and a lot of local races and referenda. With an executive order yesterday, Governor Evers tried to postpone the election, citing concerns over the coronavirus, but top Republican state lawmakers said he didn't have the power to do that. Hours later, the state Supreme Court agreed, so here we are today. And a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that came down yesterday requires absentee ballots to be postmarked or delivered by 8 o'clock tonight. We'll get into all of that in just a bit. First, let's find out how things are going at the polls. Corey Hess is with us, Wisconsin Public Radio reporter in Milwaukee. Corey, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rob.
We've been hearing your reporting in the state and national news today, Corey. Can you give us a sense of what you're seeing at the polls and what you're hearing from people there?
Well, what we're seeing is very long lines. In Milwaukee, there's normally 180 polling places, and today there's 5 polling places open. So voters are waiting anywhere between an hour to 2 hours to vote today.
What's behind the decision to cut to such a small number of voting stations?
Well, the Milwaukee Election Commission just answered that question a few minutes ago, and they said that that decision was based on the number of COVID-19 cases that the city has seen. Milwaukee has the most cases in the state. They are over 1,000 cases at this point. So they said that they chose to only open 5 polling places because they thought that was the number that they could safely staff.
And a lot of poll workers, as you mentioned, have said that they can't put themselves at risk of COVID-19, so they're staying home. With these 5 stations, does it look like they are adequately staffed?
It does. They've got about 30 poll workers at each one of these locations, and what they did was they brought in people from the National Guard to staff them. You know, typically these polling places have volunteers, and a lot of times they're over 60 years old, so they don't want to put older workers at risk.
I know you're on the job today, Corey, and I want to let you get back to it, but I want to know, what are you still watching for? What kind of questions remain to be answered today?
Well, you know what we're watching for is to see how many people are still going to be in line at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night when the polls are closing. What the Election Commission has said was if people are still in line at 8, they will be able to vote. So they are going to make sure everyone who is in line and has been waiting gets to vote.
Corey, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
Corey Hess is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter in Milwaukee. Now let's talk about how we got here and how the election process may unfold today and over the next few days. Charlie Jacobs is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, what do you make of this run-up to this election day, the attempt to postpone it at the last minute? This is not standard operating procedure.
It is not, and it's been kind of a sloppy hot mess that I think in some ways could have been avoided if everyone had played a little nicer in the sandbox and recognized that we are facing conditions that I think most people haven't seen in their lifetimes, at least those who would be involved in this decision-making process. I mean, we're not alone. The state of Wisconsin is not alone in having to grapple with this problem. 15 other states which had primaries scheduled for April or soon after the end of April, they moved their primaries, and it wasn't without some glitches and some problems, but they were all managed to do it. What's fundamentally different for Wisconsin is that we also had the nonpartisan elections going on at the same time. And that runs into issues of what do you do with positions that end before you could reschedule the election and the like. And it really would have taken a concerted effort, I think, by the legislature and the governor to have some foresight here and to get together early to try to resolve this. But it seems like everybody was moving in fits and starts, and they didn't really know exactly what powers they had, which direction to go, and how to resolve the issues.
Nina Mayer and former Republican state lawmaker Dean Coffert told WPR a couple days ago that he's not very happy that the election is happening. He said, I want to give a listen. He says both Republicans and Governor Evers share some blame here.
I still think it's the wrong decision. I think the legislature and the governor, they're not listening. Again, I was in the legislature for 24 years. It's somewhat pathetic. I mean, what a mixed message. telling people, you know, in the height of this pandemic to stay home, not go out unless they have to, all the messages that are being sent. But then on April 7th, we can throw them all out the door.
So there's a lot there, Charlie. One, he's talking about what you mentioned there, the sides not playing well together. How could leadership, Democrats and Republicans, have maybe handled this, as you see it, in a better and more orderly way?
Well, certainly, I think the governor and his administration could have reacted more quickly. I mean, he created a number of emergency orders that had far-reaching impact, like shutting down the schools on the 18th of March. At that point, recognizing that they had 3 weeks until an election, they might have started formulating a plan and working more directly with the leadership in the legislature to remedy this problem. But at the same time, the legislature can't just sit on its hands and wait for the governor to act. They have independent power from the executive, and if they believed that they were an issue, they could have filled whatever leadership void was absent in the governor's office and tried to come up with a plan. And then when you finally see the governor take some steps, when the legislature comes in and they, you know, they gavel in and gavel out a session literally within minutes without addressing any of the substantive issues, it makes you wonder whether or not either or both sides were realistic about what it would take to avoid this kind of problem of potentially spreading the disease. I mean, Michigan, many are arguing, exacerbated their COVID-19 problem because they were one of almost zero other states who actually held their primary on time. And it was after that date that we saw the transmission explode in that state. So one has to hope you cross your fingers and this doesn't have the same kind of impact.
I want to give a listen to Governor Evers. Now, this is a few days ago, a few days before he gave the executive order trying to move the election, maybe here painting himself into a corner. Here's a listen.
I can't do this or move this election or change it on my own. My hands are tied. And that's why I spoke to the legislative leaders about this weeks ago. I even publicly called on them to act. They have made it clear they are unwilling to change.
And then Republican leaders in their core challenge cited that statement when they challenged Evers' claim that he did, in fact, have the authority. Again, part of the whole sloppy hot mess phenomenon you referred to earlier, Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's the pot calling the kettle black. I mean, they had opportunities to try to remedy this situation. And, you know, in their filing, their emergency filing yesterday, you know, the Republican leaders said that they worried about voter confusion and disenfranchising voters. Well, no matter which way this went, you were going to confuse voters and probably disenfranchise some people. So to make that argument is a little hollow, because whichever direction you go, there was going to be a significant problem. But, of course, if they had sat down on Saturday when they came in a session and tried to come up with some sort of solution that would have satisfied both sides and hopefully at least reduce that confusion and reduce the disenfranchisement, it would have been helpful. It's going to be interesting to see what turnout is like. I mean, in the last several elections where you've had an incumbent president running in a primary here in the state when we also had the April elections, turnout was in excess of 22% or 23% on average. So we'll see whether or not we hit that number or whether or not we've depressed turnout because of the worries about the pandemic.
Another issue here, apart from the election going forward at all, is the issue of absentee votes, when they have to be postmarked, when they can be counted. We'd had a federal court judge extending the deadline for those ballots to be postmarked or delivered. The U.S. Supreme Court then, after a challenge, said, nope, got to be today in effect. What's your understanding of the current state of affairs when it comes to absentee ballots?
Well, the issue that was really facing the Supreme Court was a ruling by the district court judge in the Western District of Wisconsin, where he extended the date by which you could have your ballot postmarked. And in essence, you would very possibly be voting after the end of the election, and that might create confusion and problems because is the election actually over? What happens if certain amounts of the data leak out? Will people still feel confident in exercising their right to vote? And what the United States Supreme Court said was, in our precedent, we have always said, don't mess around with the rules of a state regarding voting. immediately before an election because of the confusion that it creates. Now, the dissenters from the Supreme Court argued, you're doing the same thing by coming down with another ruling so close to the election. So the federal courts didn't make this any easier and created lots of problems. And so as it stands, you've got to return your absentee ballot by 8 o'clock tonight. Now, there's something funny about what the Supreme Court said, because they said, well, once the election is over, it's over. But as Corey just mentioned, if you're standing in line at 8, where the election is technically over, you're still allowed to vote. So there are all these little slippages in the system that create opportunities for people to actually exercise their right. But it seems like both the legislature, the governor, and the courts are just making even messier a situation that was created by this virus.
We're talking about today's election, how things are going at polling locations, efforts to delay it, and more. Charlie Jacobs is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you head out to vote today? Did you work at the polls? What was it like? How did you feel? Do you think the election should have been postponed? Are you glad it went forward today? Have you had trouble getting an absentee ballot, as some people have reported? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about Wisconsin's spring election today with Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College in De Pere. If you haven't voted yet, you can still vote at your local polling station. If you're trying to vote absentee, it is due today. You have to have it postmarked today or delivered today. That extension that existed briefly is no longer in place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the decision to keep this election going today? Good idea, bad idea? Have you voted? Have you worked at polls? What are you seeing there? Did you vote absentee already? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Ron is on the line in Greendale. Ron, hello.
Well, hello. I have an understanding that the Supreme Court stayed home today while asking the voters to go, insisting that the voters who did not have a ballot or did not receive their ballot though requested, et cetera, they're expecting us to come out and function normally, whereas they are not.
Ron, thanks for the call. And Charlie, as I understand it, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is operating remotely and they've canceled some of their regular functions. I think that's what Ron is referring to.
That's true. And it's hard to tell exactly what justification the state Supreme Court is using. You know, this was an emergency petition of the court. And when that happens, they often vote and then they will provide a more substantive discussion later. So it's hard to know exactly what it was based upon. But remember, courts are often constrained in the American legal system by precedent and by their interpretation of various constitutional and statutory provisions. So before we cast, you know, really significant aspersions at the court, we've got to wait to see what they write and understand the reasoning behind it. And look, I mean, the governor himself said he didn't have much to stand on. Then he used that little he had to stand on. So I think even he knew he was in a little bit of trouble if this was going to get reviewed by a court. I mean, he's relying on the preamble to the state constitution, which is about the least effective constitutional clauses you could possibly employ to exercise a power authority. That's both in states and at the national level. So he was in real trouble here with this particular effort, but I think he felt as though he had to do something or try something, and this was the last gasp that he had.
Ron, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We heard on Facebook from Deborah, who says she just voted in rural Sauk County. It's always a slow, steady flow, but they have a great setup. Deborah says you sanitize your hands when you walk in the door. There's tape on the floor to mark the 6 feet of distance. You can bring your own marker, which Deborah says she did. The voting judges stay far back from you. You exit out a different door. But Deborah says, I was worried. I've not been anywhere in more than 2 weeks and did not like being exposed. But Deborah says, I must say they were well prepared. Charlie, can you talk about what we're hearing about how local voting agencies have dealt with this?
Yeah, I think, you know, in their attempt to try to make sure that they're protecting the public but also meeting their obligations under state law about what's required of voters when they show up, they've been really invented, you know, drive-through voting where the officials come up to your car window to try to reduce the you know, the interaction. I think one of the issues is going to be whether or not we get reports after the election about efforts that were being made in good faith that may have run into a gray area about whether or not it was appropriate. But one wonders whether or not there's going to be any challenge or litigation regarding these, considering the circumstances that everybody is facing.
Let's go back to our callers. Carolyn is with us in Kenosha. Carolyn, hello.
Yeah, hi. Hello. How are you, Ron?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I was not able to vote today because of COVID-19. I'm not going out in the lines. And I did request a mail-in ballot, which I never received. So for the first time as an adult, I will not be voting in a primary or presidential election. So I'm very upset.
Carolyn, thanks a lot for the call. We've heard some reports, reporters, individuals saying, just like Carolyn, they'd ordered a ballot in advance and never gotten it. Charlie, is there any kind of recourse out there for people in that situation?
Unfortunately, there isn't. I mean, and this was the issue that was facing the district court in Madison. They wanted to extend this because they understood that clerks were overwhelmed with the request for absentee ballots. And so they were trying to just give a little wiggle room so that they could be delivered and then returned for those individuals. And I think there's some confusion among voters. If they applied for an absentee ballot, it hasn't yet come. Could they go to the polls and cast a ballot? So, again, this is this argument that comes from the Republican leaders about the problem of disenfranchisement and confusion. That was already layered into the process. The question is what are our elected officials going to do to relieve that? And really, they didn't do much of anything because they were squabbling about exactly who was responsible and how they were going to affect a change in a short period of time.
Thanks for that call, Carolyn. We're talking to Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College, looking at today's election day and the run-up to it. Back to your calls now. Patrick is with us in Wisconsin Dells. Patrick, hello.
Hello. Hey, you know, just got to put my point in here. You know, the date of this election has not moved, and we've known for months and months, if not, I don't know, a year, that this was the day. Okay, so that hasn't crept forward or backward. And, you know, we have our constitutional right to order a ballot. If people think that they can order a ballot, like, I don't know, 72 hours before they're supposed to be handed in, and then they got to complain about, hey, I couldn't get my ballot, I couldn't vote, you know what? That's kind of on them. You just made a point about our elected officials, whether they were asleep at the wheel or not. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I think a lot of people throughout different ranks of government, all the way to Wisconsin's county, we're asleep at the wheel on this one, okay? So don't be shocked, folks, because you didn't get the vote. You can't wait till 72 hours before it's due and think you're going to get that vote, that ballot, delivered to you.
Thanks a lot for the call. We've seen, of course, Charlie, a lot of people saying they'd requested their ballots in late March, so about a week, at least in some of the anecdotal cases. What's your response, Charlie?
Again, this is such an unusual circumstance. It's hard to point fingers and cast blame on certain individuals or certain actors. Everybody has a certain level of culpability, but at the end of the day, our public officials are there for a particular reason, which is to try to resolve emergency issues like this. And I think that there was some question about how fast this was going to spread, what the impact was going to be. And really, the governor acted relatively quickly in the early weeks of March to try to remedy this in a number of ways. And the legislature had a similar amount of time to do it. Why they didn't react quicker and come up with a resolution for the public, because the public is probably least equipped to try to understand the methods that are available to them to secure that absentee ballot or to protect themselves when they go to the polls. They have to rely on those in these positions. And so I think that we can sort of at least discuss what went wrong with the intervention by our state government to try to help out voters to make sure that they could cast their vote like Carolyn wanted to do and couldn't do for the first time in her adult life.
Thanks a lot for that call. Charlie, I want to take our last couple of minutes to look to the future. Some people are watching us here in Wisconsin and saying, okay, what if this thing is still around come November's election? Or what if it, you know, dissipates but then picks up again in the fall? What kind of lessons can we learn here so that this isn't a fiasco on a national level?
I think all states have to at least create some sort of statutory provisions that give some flexibility primarily to the executive and maybe with the health department in the state as well to make decisions about exactly how this is going to occur. I think what happened in particular in Wisconsin is there's almost no language that allows for the governor or the Board of Elections to make these kinds of changes in emergency situations. So I think it's incumbent upon legislatures and governors to start to work together to figure out what they're going to do if COVID-19 hasn't dissipated by the time we run this election. And that's going to take a lot of hard swallowing by partisans on both sides to sit down at the table because these are contested elections, which mean power. But if we are serious about issues of disenfranchisement and voter confusion, that's the kind of hard work that has to get done in the context of everything else that they're doing right now.
And briefly, Charlie, I mean, you know, maybe we wouldn't have predicted this particular pandemic, but given that, you know, there are diseases out there, there could be cyber attacks, national or natural disasters, why don't we have more contingency plans in place for election days?
I don't think we believe that could actually occur, that we would disrupt something like this, that we would somehow be able to overcome it. But I think 9/11, more than anything, exposed potential weaknesses. And I think the other problem that we've seen here is that any attempt to alter the electoral system of the United States over the last decade or so is viewed through a microscope and with grave suspicion that somebody is trying to game the system for their benefit, whether or not it's changing how long you have to cast an absentee ballot, why you qualify for one, whether you show a photo ID, whether you extend voting times. All of these raise a question about, are the Democrats gaining advantage or the Republicans getting an advantage? Instead of just recognizing that, you know, as small D Democrats, we should all have the hope that as many people who are qualified to vote can exercise that right and pick the people to represent them in office.
Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. Have a great day.
That's Charlie Jacobs, political scientist at St. Norbert College in De Pere. We talked to them today about the drama surrounding Wisconsin's spring general election. You can still share your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page.